You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we have an action-packed show today. In studio, we've got two great guests with us, Dr. Anthony Davis, who is a senior pastor and CEO, trainer, author, professional speaker, and so much more, sitting with us for we're going to have him on our first segment. And our second segment is with Karen Whiting. She is a freelance writer, an award-winning author of 25 nonfiction books. Karen loves so many things, and she just told us she's a mother of five, including two rocket scientists. She's a grandmother. She writes to help families thrive, and she's written more than 700 articles for more than 60 publications. I also have my co-host, Ellen Little, who's here with me, and I've got so much information right in front of me that I'm not sure where to start. It's such a great day to have wonderful people that are willing to come into studio with us and sit down and share really great information, and valuable information, I should say. So, Dr. Davis, I'm going to say welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Karen, welcome to our show as well.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Sita.
Thank you. Before we start our action-packed show, I just want to give a shout-out to all the local organizers who organized the Women's March on Saturday here in Brevard and all around the nation. I was privileged to share an experience a year ago in Washington, D.C. with my two daughters, and I have to differ with a lot of people who thought it was just women marching. There were men and women, and people were marching not just for women's rights, but they were also marching for things like social justice reform, affordable housing, equality for everyone, wages that are equal, and so many other things. And I met such wonderful people at that march that are still my friends today. One of such people is our friend April Powers, who had called in, and yeah, I actually met
I remember how you were like on cloud nine when you came back from D.C. from that event, because it was just such an inspirational moment. I felt like I was there with you because you had shared such great stories about it. So hopefully some of our listeners were able to get out to the Saturday event here in Brevard County.
Well, you know, to say live by example, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're able to use your voice, the voice that is afforded to me and others by the good grace of the Lord, whether you're a Muslim, Hindu, Christian, whatever it is, I think we should. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of my amazing experiences in Washington, D.C. last year is I remember looking at this policeman who was on the train, and he said, "Are you from Trinidad?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "I'm a Trini as well, and I'm going to be at the march tomorrow, and I will be protecting you ladies."
Oh,
and we
sweet.
Became really good friends. He was from Trinidad and Tobago, and also, I was on the train, and this gentleman struck up a conversation with my two daughters and I, and he happened to be a classmate of Senator Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. And he saw us with our signs going to the Women's March, and he, of course, was there for the inauguration. He was going to be sitting right up front. Actually, he was sitting in the front with Senator Sessions, and he proceeded to tell me how he knew him, and he actually invited us to go to the inauguration, to a ball with him. We're like, no, we're going to the Women's March. So it was kind of fun. We met a lot of nice people from all walks of life, and yes. I just have that face where I can speak to the wall, and the wall will speak back to me.
And obviously, yeah. You look like you're from Trini.
So. Yes. So anyway, so we just wanted to thank all our friends for doing that, and also, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about with the current situation with the DACA kids and the immigration reform that they're voting on right now in Washington, D.C., whether to reopen the government or not, was if you send 800,000 people back, some who were children when they were brought to this country, what culture are you going to be sending them back to? Because they don't know the countries that their parents came from. And I thought about Dr. Davis and that he's going to be on our show today because he's done so much on human trafficking. And I thought some of those people, if they're sent back, men, women, and children, that is an area of concern. And it should concern a lot of us that human traffickers will be waiting for those people. So, Dr. Davis, I wanted to welcome you to the show, and we'll talk about it a little bit. But before we jump into that, tell our listeners on WWBC AM 1510 a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, we don't have enough time in the day to do all that, at least with the things that I've been able to do. But I think the biggest thing that I could say that would be assistance is that I'm simply a servant. I was born here to serve the people and to serve the people of God. You know, my life is fulfilled not in my accomplishments, but in the things that I can do to make others happy, to, you know, bring a sense of justice. And I come from a family, a long line of people working in civil rights. And, you know, my father, he's deceased now, but he was a lawyer and a judge with the Civil Rights Department and has always done things. And I've got a grandmother who's also deceased, who's worked with the methadone clinic and helping people who were there. So I grew up seeing people being helped, and I grew up having family and friends that are on both sides of the street, you know, financially, socioeconomically. So for me, my life has just been about service. I've done 10 years in the military. I've served in community areas. I'm, you know, a pastor. I work with Domestic Violence Task Force, Human Trafficking Task Force. You know, I do acting, public speaking, you know, anything where I can use the gifts that God has given me to really get the word out about love.
Right. And you also, you're the pastor of No Mission. Is it
No Limit Ministries.
Yes. And what is the mission?
Our mission is just to touch the life of each and every individual that God would send our way.
Isn't that short and sweet?
Yeah,
love it.
Absolutely.
Right? So tell us a little bit. How do you plan to achieve that mission?
Well, you know, when Jesus was around, he spoke to those that were there one person at a time. You know, we have the gift now, or gift, if some call it, of social media, where we have an ability to get out. But my job is just to talk to one person at a time. Anybody that grew up in science knew that it takes one chemical to cause a chain reaction. You know, so you can talk to one person and who I'm seeing totally, you know, innocuous in terms of what could they do or what could they say. And you find that person could have a great effect on the world. You know, look at some of the great leaders in our lifetime. You know, King, Gandhi, these are folks that, you know, were born just like you and I, but went on to do great things because of the belief if I touch one soul at a time. And so that's always been my goal. Any more than that, then you set yourself up for failure if you don't get it. You know, like when I preach or teach you something, it's not a matter of who's there. It's a matter that somebody is there. And I remember times early on in ministry when my wife and I were starting out, when we go and open the doors and there was maybe nobody there. And I was like, well, it's not a good day. We'll just go home. And she's like, no, don't I count? And I'm looking at a bunch of chairs and just her, and she would say, I need a word too. And I would actually begin to teach and preach as if there were thousands there.
Yes.
Because that's what's in you and not based upon the number of people that came. And, you know, my whole work has been based upon the fact that, you know, my life has been touched in a positive way and I want to touch others. It's not paying it forward or playing it forward. It's just doing what I was born to do.
Well, you know, it's the similar thing. You know, when Ellen and I started Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, people will often ask, you know, why do you guys have a radio show? Or why did you start it? And I said, well, you know, I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into the show. But if one person is listening and they learn something from our show, then it's well worth it. If more than one is listening and they learn something, that's fine. Because, you know, we try to give out such valuable information, whether it is about opening a business or voting or you know, something with human trafficking, domestic violence, whatever it is,
right.
we try. And I think that's the model that a lot of people who want to do good and promote good, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know?
If it's not said, it can't be heard. If it's not heard, it's not going to be, nothing's going to be done. So, and you never know who you're talking to.
So, yeah. One of the things I like about you, Dr. Davis, is you are a strong voice in leadership roles. How does one become such a strong voice in the public? How do you have that?
You know, when I look back, because for me, things become natural. You know, of course, you take courses and things, but I never took anything and, hey, this is how you become a leader. This is what you do. It's about just having a passion for something. One, a passion for life. You have to love yourself. You have to love yourself, and then you have to have a love and a concern for people. And I guess one of the things that I learned early on in life was I never was told that I couldn't do something. You know, but I always told it, if you want to do something, my dad used to say, you know, it's okay to be a dreamer, but be a dreamer who knows when it's time to wake up and make the dream a reality.
Right.
And, you know, someone else says, you get nothing on your knees but sore knees. That's true. You got to get up. God gives us the ability, the power to obtain wealth, to do things. And so I've always just said, you know what? To be a leader is not to try to hold, quote unquote, what a leader is, but to be someone who's willing to take a stand when no one else will. Who's willing to take the least trodden road, who's willing to say something that people don't want to say, but who's willing to get along with everybody.
Even when it's difficult.
Even when it's difficult.
Right. You know, that's why sometimes I think, you know, we're all watching the news, and I am a news junkie, but I had to turn it off this weekend. But I always say, you know, if people just know what the word compromise actually means, you know, to compromise in your home, compromise at work, compromise with your spouse, compromise with your children, then one of the components of leadership is to learn to compromise.
Exactly.
And I think right now, if our leaders on both sides of the aisle can compromise and do what's good for everyone, not just their base or themselves, it would be a wonderful thing.
Well, you know what? We're not a country of donkeys and elephants. We're a nation of people. And, you know, these people, we elect them to represent our state, which is a diverse state, no matter which state you come from. You're not there, you may represent and have views or values that are more conservative than others, but the bottom line is the welfare of people. And we don't have that anymore. You know, those folks are in Washington now deciding to keep this country afloat. When we're still living here, we're still existing here. We don't stop living. Time doesn't stop. And they need to do the right thing. Well, the right thing isn't saying, well, I got a victory. It's not about them. It's not about us. It's about our nation.
Oh, it's not about re-election also, because a lot of times it's about, well, if I do this, will I get re-elected next time around?
Yeah.
And that sucks. It really does. Yeah. Because, I mean, how many of us can go to our jobs and hope to do something ridiculous and still stay in the job for another year
and
or two?
And still stay in the job.
You know, it's not fair. So tell me, Dr. Davis, how can you influence policy by standing up for justice through the church?
You know, whether it's in the church or whether it's out, to influence policy or anything else, you have to not be in the frame of mind that that's what you're trying to do. What you want to do is to speak the truth. What you want to do is speak in love. And those two catalysts themselves will complete what they need to do. You know, God is love. And so if God is love, then everything we do must be in love. There are people that we get mad at. But one thing that I do, I started doing this year, is everybody that I encounter, I want to leave something positive. The clerk at the door, you know, someone that comes in. And then when I was in Chicago freezing a couple of weeks ago, I did that. And just the response I got from people that worked in the store, because no one ever spoke to them or spoke with them. And these are the people that vote. These are the people that have opinions. These are the people that can change things. You never know when you're going to talk to an angel. You're going to be talking to someone who looks like on the outside that they're nothing, but inside they're very wealthy. And so you just have to be able to go out there and say, hey, listen, we want love. We want peace. We want and when you bring people back to the basic element, because I don't care what you do in the pop, you can dress yourself up, you can do your hair, you can wear the finest clothes, you can have chauffeurs, but in the final analysis, when you stand in the mirror, there's nobody there but you.
Yes, and you know who you are.
And you know who you are.
What is that saying? You could put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig.
It's still a pig.
Right? Well, you know, I like what you said, because I tend to speak with everyone, and I do have that gift where I can speak with the janitor, and I could speak with President Obama and be heard, right?
Right.
But I think it's because you get back what you put out.
Yeah.
And I think if you're kind and you're positive, and people could sense that what you're saying is truth, is the truth, and you show them respect, they will give you back that in return.
And that's one of the biggest things is that you go in curiosity and not in judgment, right? You go asking questions instead of judging right away about what you think the answer is already going to be. And that's the way you open up conversation, and that's mm-hmm. the way you find out about things, because I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says that they're going to be a bad person, right? They don't wake up with that intention. I really don't feel that. But I think the process of day-to-day or the process of life just takes somebody down the wrong path. And I think just opening up those questions and where did that start and how did that come, you know, just like we're doing here on the radio. We ask questions.
Well, sometimes people just want you to smile. They just want you to say good morning. I mean, sometimes I go to the gym and somebody holds the door open for me mm-hmm. and I don't have to say a word to him or her, but he held the door open, and then I'll do the same for someone else. Well, you know, you paid forward.
80% of communication is nonverbal.
That's right.
You know, so in out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth will speak. When you say the mouth, you're talking about your actions. You decide in life what you want to do. You choose. Every day is a choice. You choose to do this or you choose not to do this. You choose to hate or you choose to love. It's your choice. And what we need to do is identify the root of a person's issue. Here's my thing. If you don't have the true love of God, I know you're unhappy. I know there are things that are going wrong. But I'm not going to hold that against you, because where your problem may be one thing, God says all men have sinned and fallen short of his glory. So we all have issues. So the idea is to look at people not based upon what you think they've done or who they think they are, but as someone just like you. This is where you say you love your neighbor as you love yourself. We're not any different. Here's the final analysis. You can run from God all your life, but you will never escape him.
That's so true.
You'll never escape him.
That's what my mother used to tell us all the time. So one of the most difficult things as a church leader is knowing what questions to ask, because it's very challenging. What do you find is the most challenging being the leader of a church, a pastor of a church?
Well, I tell you, and our church is going through a transition. Actually, I'm going into more of an evangelistic role now.
Yes.
And traveling, because when you are limited to the four walls, sometimes you focus and you put your concern on the walls and on the establishment, on the building. And the love of God and the call of God is freer and more fluid than that. It's not confined to a building or place, because you can have a place that you call a church, sell it, and it becomes a club. So it's about the people. The most challenging thing that is for a number of people in leadership or in ministry is just to be real, to be honest, to the fact that, listen, I don't know all the answers, but God does. Right. I don't know every right answer. I don't go in there telling people what to vote or how to vote or what to do. I tell them to use the mind that God has given you, to trust in yourself, and if not, to seek out information. That's why the Bible says, study to show thyself approved. You know, we've gotten into such religiosity that gone are the relationship that God have. If you didn't have the denomination, you still have God, and you still have love, no matter what you call them. And it's not for me to decide, well, my Christian faith is better than this and that and the other. Listen, you look around, we all got issues. Our nation is full of issues. But somebody has to decide, I'm going to love. And I'm going to stand hold on love and allow the word to work. It's not about, well, this scripture or that scripture or your philosophy or my philosophy. They mean nothing. The world's not going to stop. The sun's not going to stop shining because I feel differently or because I say God is this or that. Whether you call him Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever, you must work in love. And that's what we need to do.
Well, you know, that's such a positive message, right? But oftentimes people pass away and you'll see someone that pays so much money to have a headstone that says rest in peace. I always say, why don't we tell people rest in peace when they're alive?
Exactly.
Why don't you sleep every night knowing that your neighbor has health insurance, that you can have affordable housing, that people can go to school if they want to and get a loan or get a grant? Why can't we be happy for other people knowing that there's so much atrocities in the world and so much anxieties? You know, it's terribly unfair that some of us think about those things and some don't. And I find the older I get, the more I worry about the state that we're leaving this world in for the next generation. And I do believe that people have to have family, friends, most important, faith, and a little change in the bank.
Yeah.
You have to have that. Otherwise, how else can we survive?
Yeah, well, Ecclesiastes says that money is a defense. So you need to have a currency in which to exchange for certain things. But it's that love when we decide, you know, my life is going to be better because I have tons of money. And there's been so many people of great acclaim that we thought who died and who were miserable or who have gotten money, ill-gotten ways, and then they see it comes out in the end. the bottom line I've learned, and you know, I turned 55, I'll turn 56 this year, is to appreciate every day. Every day that I have. There's nothing that says I'm going to live next week. Now, I don't have a terminal illness that I know of that says I'm going to die, but every day is a new experience. I want to experience every day. I don't want to set my goals and sights for something that is yet to come. Live in the now. Now's where people, I have kids, I pass on wisdom and knowledge to them. I talk to strangers. You know, you see people that look like they're downtrodden or whatever. It's like, hey, you can do it. Life is going to be good. You know, no matter what they say, somebody has to do that. And you're going to come up against one thing about it. You're going to come up against negativity, but negativity doesn't have to take advantage of you. You determine whether somebody's bad ideas or bad understanding or bad words are going to affect you. I'm not going to let how you feel affect me, but I'm going to affect you with a positive
message.
Well,
it just breeds more negativity, right? So for our listeners who are tuning in this morning to WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7, the calm, collected voice you're hearing is that of Dr. Anthony Davis. He is the senior pastor and CEO of, I have to call it, No Limit Ministries. And No Limit Ministries is a non-denominational ministry focusing on reaching everyone from all walks of life, just the way we like it. Their motto is there's no limit to what God can do for us.
No limit.
So Dr. Davis, I have, I listened to you speak many times, and you've spoken quite well about human trafficking. And you've got people like me and so many of my friends involved in that cause. And statistics present a very harrowing picture of human misery. 1.2 million children are trafficked every year, accounting for more than 27% of trafficking victims. 58% of trafficking victims are exploited sexually, and 36% are used as forced labor, and so much more. I could go on and on and on. So tell me, how did you get involved in trying to help in this social crisis called human trafficking?
My initial start was dealing with domestic violence. One of my members was killed in 06 by her husband, so I worked closely with the Harbor House and then CEO of Harbor House, Carol Wick, you know, who educated me on domestic violence and the issues there. And then a few years after that, I met a gentleman by the name of Tomas Lars, who has worked in Brevard County and now in Orange, dealing with human trafficking. And we sat down one day at lunch and talked about the correlation between domestic violence and human trafficking, that you're still talking about a familiar situation with somebody that they call daddy, who essentially controls their whole life. And again, because it dealt with issues of people, I've always had, you know, this passion in my heart to assist women in the issues that they're dealing with. And, you know, human trafficking is about money. You know, domestic violence is about power and control. So you put them together, and it's controlling someone for the sake of money for yourselves. And it used to be a third world issue. Now it's an epidemic here in the United States with our own children, men, women, boys, and girls. And it's a travesty. And human trafficking is something, a plight that must stop. It's about sex and money. You have those that will buy and those who will sell a life as if it belongs to somebody.
And where does Florida rank in human trafficking?
Well, in the number of reported cases, it's number three. Reported, you know, to the national call center where there's cases that are reporting. Whether it's confirmed cases or not, it's hard to say. You know, statistics to me are here and there. Like you said, with the numbers, our kids are being taken every day. And Orlando's number three in terms of reported calls to the hotline. And so, you know, it's at a place right now where, you know, I tell parents who have young girls or young boys, watch them. There's no such thing as, you know, a free modeling job or this or that. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Because there are predators out here who will, some will snatch them. The gorilla pimps will just take the girls. The Romeos are the ones that are going to wine and dine them. If your child comes home and they're getting purses or things that you know that you didn't buy them, you know, you need to inquire. We need to know more about what's going on with our kids.
Yeah, pay attention to their shoes and clothes,
everything,
and purses and whatnot. So how do you raise awareness about human trafficking with your congregation?
Well, with the congregation, simply by making statements, you know, messages, giving them messages, and working and educating the leadership that's there. But that's congregations. I talk to different pastors across different churches. We train businesses. We train companies. We train schools. We talk to whomever. And, you know, as the chairman of Florida Abolitionists, which is a human trafficking organization, you know, this is something that for over 10 years we've been working on trying to put an end to, and we're making a lot of headway.
And one big success was the home, right?
Yes, shelter. Orange County recently opened up a shelter for trafficking victims solely, which, you know, before they would have to go to a domestic violence shelter or something.
Yes.
And they're two different types of victims or survivors, as you would have it.
So you try to integrate them back into the community through the shelters. Now, what is your website, Dr. Davis, if somebody wanted to visit the church or if they wanted to find out some of the work?
Or get you to public speak.
You're a motivational speaker, and you're founder and CEO of No Limit Ministries. You're also an author. I'm sure you have a website that we can give out to our listeners.
Well, the website that I use now would be FloridaAbolitionist.org. Most of everything I have goes through then. Like I said, we're through a transition now with No Limit, where I'm going to be doing more evangelistic work. So that website isn't functioning as yet, because there's a greater move to get this word just from here to across the nation. But I think you can also reach me at DrAnthonyDavis@AOL.com.
I'm glad that somebody else has an AOL account besides me.
Well, I got one too. We're the last survivors.
You're also a former special agent of the U.S. Air Force of Special Investigations.
Yes.
And you're also a former senior osteoporosis specialist
with Merck and Company.
Really? Yeah. Oh, you have a medical background as well.
Huge, diverse background.
Yeah.
Read his LinkedIn profile. It'll take you a day.
And if we want you as a motivational speaker as well, we can find you through that website too.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, or you can find me at DrAnthonyDavis@AOL.com.
And I just want to... We have an event coming up
at
Calvary.
Yeah, I did find that. It's actually going to be next Saturday at Calvary Assembly in Orlando. That's 1199 Clay Street. It's from 10 to 3. It's our 10th annual Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And we also have, during the same time, a film festival. We have over 500 films that were documentaries that were made by people across this nation about human trafficking. So we're inviting everybody to come out to Calvary Assembly in Orlando. We usually have it at Lake Eola, but you know, Calvary has been so nice to us to open up the room in case there's inclement weather or something. And it's our 10th annual, so we want it everywhere. You got to bring your children.
And it is a great facility. I've done a lot of events there. It's a fantastic facility for that. So fantastic.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we get that on our website as well as our Facebook pages.
I tell you, it's always awesome to bring on people who are doing really awesome things in the community, not just for themselves or the institution in which they represent, but for the good of mankind. So, Dr. Davis, thank you so much for taking your time to come in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and share that with us. Is there anything else you're working on that our listeners here on AM 1510 WWBC should be aware of besides that event happening?
No, the only thing I'm doing is, like I said, I'm getting ready to travel, so I am hoping for speaking engagements to get out and really pass this positive message, no matter what it is, businesses, schools, corporations. We just need to get the word out. Somebody has to take a positive stand, and that's what I've been called to do.
Well, I think that's what we need right now is more positivity and less negativity, and people need to just work together and unite. Just, you know, I think if we want to be prosperous, we all have to understand that we're in this world called a global village together. So thank you, and I think that's the end of our first segment. It's awesome.
We're going to hear a little bit of sponsors.
Yeah.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars.
Cloud Nine Sleep Shop in the Merritt Square Mall has expanded to meet the growing needs of the community and customers. Cloud Nine Sleep Shop now has a 10,000 square foot showroom with a wider variety of choices for customers to shop for bedroom, living room, and dining room furniture from nationally recognized brands such as Ashley Furniture. Cloud Nine Sleep Shop also carries memory foam mattresses from Serta, Ashley Sleep, Enso, and many more. Cloud 9 has furniture to meet the needs of budget-minded customers with quality furniture. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop is a family-owned business that understands the needs of growing families. Furnish your home with one-stop shopping from Cloud 9 Sleep Shop. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop, centrally located in Brevard at the Merritt Square Mall. For more information, go to their website at cloud9sleepshop.com.
When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Cedar Begee on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7. This is Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends. What a great first segment we had with Dr. Anthony Davis. And now our second segment is going to be with Karen Whiting, an author. But before we do that, Ellen, I had a pretty good, you know how I like the Dalai Lama and I love the Pope, right? Yeah. So I think I should read this for listeners here. It says, the Dalai Lama, when asked what surprised him the most about humanity, answered, man, because he sacrifices his health in order to make money, then he sacrifices money to recuperate his health, and then he's so anxious about the future that he does not enjoy the present, the result being that he does not live in the present or the future. He lives as if he is never going to die, and then dies having really never lived. And that's exactly what Dr. Davis was talking about when he said he wakes up every day and he lives for today. And my mom used to tell us children to live every day as if it's the last day on earth, which means you would appreciate it. So every day when I wake up, sometimes I'll put on my Facebook that I'm enjoying God's magnificent planet.
That's right.
I'm enjoying my vacation on earth because I do think of this gift of life as a vacation. How many people don't make it to earth?
That's right.
Or how many people
and when you
die
hear your
young.
Friends say and hear, you know, public service announcement, right? If you hear your friends saying that they're having a bad day, figure out how to help them change it at that moment, right? Make it so that it's a good day, because at every moment we can, just like Dr. Davis said, we can choose love, we can choose hate, we can
right.
choose sadness,
or you can choose
faith,
or you can just choose to, you know, listen to your friends and find out what's bugging them. Oftentimes people just want you to listen and they want you to offer some advice. But what I always tell people is if something is bothering you, there's so much help now on the internet for people who are having a bad day, people who are struggling about a certain addiction, people who are struggling about something they heard on the news if they want to know if it's truth or false. You can read. I read about 4 hours a night, and I absolutely love it because I enjoy, you know, learning and growing and getting my knowledge base more expanded for the show and stuff. So it's kind of nice.
It's awesome.
So, and there's always Starbucks.
That's right.
And I wake up every day and ask God to just put someone in front of me that he wants me to bless. And each time that I've done that, then I've said, then who's the next one? At the end of the day, I say, all right, who was in front of me today that I can now pray about that I saw them today? And, you know, I think that we, because that's part of living in the now. You know, even if somebody cuts in front of me, people get so upset about that. And I always think, oh, God just put somebody there. I don't know them, but I'll pray for them.
I don't know what it is anymore. I think they're just rushing around. Some people just enjoy being on the roads and just making miserable for other people.
Well,
I mean, the trick is if you're on the road and you're behind the wheel of a car, you should not be texting and driving, which we all do, right? Sometimes I do it at traffic lights and my kids catch me. Or leave home early. You know, life is about planning. So if you know you have to be at a certain place, just give yourself enough time, you know, because that's what causes all this road rage.
It does. And, that's
and then
why,
you have to end up blessing them.
So, right. Yes, but then I'll pray because I feel like they're not focused and they're in too much of a rush to not just be calm enough on the road. So,
and I'll there's that curiosity and not judgment again, where we say, boy, they must be, you know, you never know what news they could have just gotten. You never know what could be going on in their life for that particular day. And never go in judgment. I hear people say, "Ew, idiot."
I do judge. I'm not going to lie. I do judge people sometimes. So Karen Whiting, I have to say, you're a freelance writer. You're award-winning author of 25 nonfiction books. You love your family. You're a mom of five, including two rocket scientists, which is pretty cool. Your grandmother. And so tell us more. I mean, you've got 700 articles published. How did you get into writing?
Well, I'm a mathematician, so you can imagine I never expected to write, never wanted to do that. But it was something God called me to do. And people continually said, oh, you have to write a book. Look at all the things you do with your children. My children love going to your house because the things that you do, you have to write about that. So when my first started college in that September, my youngest started preschool, a lot of years between those five, from first to last. I said, all right, I have a little bit of time. I'll start writing. And I had prayed, and God had not only told me yes, but he gave me a vision, and someone gave me a painting of the vision. So it was like confirmed, this is what I'm supposed to do. I started writing, and God also gave me a walking partner who was a published author who kind of took me under a wing. I went to a conference, and people said, oh, send these things to us. And I started sending in little pieces, and they started being picked up for publication, and it just sort of snowballed from there.
And what did you write about in those first few articles?
The first few things were sometimes just little devotions on what had happened with my children, activities for children for Shining Star, which was published by Simon and Schuster. I picked up a sample copy and started writing for them of activities for children and things for teachers to do in a classroom, and it
snowballed.
Kept going.
It kept going. Yeah. I know I use my personal experience sometimes to write up a Facebook post. Mm-hmm. Like, I think everybody saw the one I just wrote a couple days ago where I was speaking with someone, an immigrant like myself, who's naturalized, and she's from the Philippines, and mm-hmm. a good friend of mine, and she was saying that she didn't think the 800,000 people should be allowed to stay in the United States. And I looked at her, and I wanted to say something. I was judging her, and I said, but then I just smiled at her, and I said, where are you getting your information from?
See, you went in curiosity.
And you
know,
saved
yourself.
And the thing is, and then she says, well, you know, they're all illegal here, and my tax dollars are paying for them, and I don't want them here. And I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking, you're an immigrant hater. Because you're one yourself. You shouldn't be like that. So then I explained to her, these are children who were brought here, with no fault of their own. And I said, would you hold a child responsible if his parent was speeding and hit someone? You can't. So, you know, you use your experience to write or to speak or to help people or whatever. And I think that's wonderful that you were able to do that.
And I write to really help bring strong family bonds because so many people live in dysfunctional families. I grew up in a functional family. I raised a functional family. They're raising functional families. And a lot of people don't know that model. And I try to help them. Another book, you know, that I just did recently, The Gift of Bread. What's in it? Recipes and things. Why? And not only did I grow up in dairy farm country, but my uncle next to me and my grandparents, two houses from me, all had restaurants. I worked in those restaurants. I did a lot there. I was always cooking.
So you got the recipes.
Bread became important to me, and because of church, bread and the Bible became important to me. So that merged together to become this book, as of something. And beyond that, I felt that pull again of the families that they don't eat together. And the family statistics do show the families who eat together, the children do better in school. They're less likely to be human trafficked and other things because they feel loved and approved and accepted. And breaking bread together and making bread is part of that, having meals together and taking time to be in the moment with your family, with your friends or loved ones, whoever you are.
And it's a time of conversation as well. You know, it used to be that people would sit around a dinner table and they wouldn't speak about what's going on around the nation or in their town or in their communities. But now people are beginning to shift back to where they sit with their families and ask about their day and something they saw on the news. And they're speaking more about things like immigration and social issues, I find. Don't you find that?
That is so profound that we don't sit at the dinner table anymore. One person eats here, one person eats there, one person goes here. And that is, all the people I talk to, that is one of the main ingredients that's missing from the nuclear family today, having the time to sit down as a family.
Maybe it's because we have too many rooms in our houses as well, where one could go into TV room, then you have a dining room, then you have a living room. You know, in the old days, you had one little house and everybody had one table and one space, common space, right? I know that's how our house was, where you could sit and that's where you ate. Or in my case, we ate on the steps because we didn't have a kitchen table. We didn't have a table. So you write for traditional publishers like HarperCollins and McGraw-Hill, and that can be very hard to break into. How did you do it, and what advice do you have for aspiring authors?
I did it by starting to write and really being open to anyone who gave me critique on it, that especially if they were writers or editors, to hone my writing and to make it better. I had to start a critique group. There wasn't one around, to help polish each other's words, and then going to the writers' conferences where they were publishing the types of things I wrote and that I write. So that's a really big thing, to network with people and to go to that conference, to be open to learning. I've met so many writers that will want to be writers that say, everything I wrote is perfect, there's nothing that has to be changed. And I thought, you're not going to get published easily.
Yeah, you have to be able to open. Have the constructive criticisms. Dr. Davis, you're also an author, aren't you?
Yes.
You wrote a couple of books as well.
Yes.
Yes. So hopefully you two can network. So your latest book is an inspirational bread cookbook. And you told us about your background. What are some of the features in that book? What are some of the features in that book?
Oh, the Inspirational Bread Book, The Gift of Bread. Yes, that, as I was saying, it starts off each time with a heartwarming story around bread, because I want to bring in the idea of let's sit together and eat with one another. And then it moves into insights into bread in the Bible to find the spiritual roots of how bread, communion, and breaking bread with other people is important. Even the word companion means to break bread with a friend. And then it goes on to either recipes or tips on bread making. So if you've tried quick breads with your zucchini or fruits or whatever and they don't come out, why doesn't it? You can go in and read why. Tips on serving bread.
So that's one book we have to send to the Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's talking about breaking bread with people and learning to love and one forgive another. and listen to each other. And maybe we just need to send.
And there are solutions in recipes.
Yeah.
I know they won't work out so well.
I've told you before, I need to cook a big pot of curry chicken and rice and take it to the steps of the Congress and have the House and the Senate sit down and eat my curry chicken.
That's right.
And say, let's talk about issues.
Yes, and I have a number of different types of bread. So whether it's barley bread or Irish bread, because that's some of my roots, or Scottish scones and other things are in there, because I wanted to share the recipes of heritage I grew up with and that friends shared with
you. You guys use a lot
time.
Of butter. The scones have a lot of butter. I know. Because we have
they
that
do.
In Trinidad. We've got scones and buns and currants roll and all that good stuff.
Right.
Come from the English.
Some of them, yes, they do use a lot of butter. A lot of dairy farming. Mm-hmm. And so they have the butter. As I said, I grew up in Connecticut with dairy farming. And so butter and cream and milk were very plentiful ingredients. And you use what you have. You know, and there are certainly other recipes in that in the book that are oil-based or other types of ingredients and don't use all the butter in them.
So your books have led to speaking in several countries, including Russia. Do you speak Russian as well?
No, I don't speak Russian. Don't
in
speak
Malaysia.
Chinese.
And last spring, a company flew you to China. And you don't speak Chinese, obviously,
no.
Right? For an imagination tour. So tell us a little bit about how were you received when you speak in different countries? Is it a religious-based organization, or is it just speaking as an author or motivational speaker? What's the draw?
It's been different each time. In Russia, it was for a Christian camp for me to minister to the leaders, lay leaders, who would go back to their churches to work on family ministries. And they had their families with them. I got there, and I didn't even know I had to introduce myself immediately. I thought I was had a rest till the evening. And so I said, well, who has a piece of paper
and scissors? That's pretty challenging. You get off the plane, and they take you right to a speaking engagement.
So I just asked for a piece of paper and scissors, and I cut them a story and showed things, and they were just all enthralled of all ages. And so that kind of got me engaged with them right away to do something. And they added things besides my talking. They said, you're so good with these cutting things. Can you do some activities in the afternoon with the children? And I did. Now, when I went to China, we had a they had us regimented on going from one place to the next, and we knew what we were doing, but sometimes we were talking to the parents, sometimes the educators, sometimes we were doing activities
with the
children.
So do you have an interpreter when you do these speaking engagements?
Yes, I do. There's always someone there to translate the words and help me out. And it's fun.
That's
with
fascinating.
The children with the we were doing an inspiration tour to inspire creativity. So the first activity I did with them was just handed out chenille stems, because you had to know what can they get there plentiful that we also can work with, and just had them making shapes. And then I stopped them all and said, okay, I don't know many Chinese words. Can you make a shape and teach me that word? And that was so much fun. The children were making flowers and bicycles and all sorts of things to teach me words and having me repeat after them. And there'd always be some boy in each group who was like a little drill sergeant that would get me to say it right. And they'd use their hand motions for how to do the accents.
So,
I loved them.
So what was the message that you took from the United States? If in China, it wouldn't be Christian-based. So what was the message? What were they hoping for you to share with them?
What I really was in China, there has been such a movement to learn by memorization. They're there at school till 5 p.m., and then they have another 4 or 5 hours of homework of memorizing things. They're losing their art somewhat. They're losing their creativity. And Chinese arts are wonderful, the paper cutting, the kite making, all sorts of things. So they wanted to bring that back to being creative. And the message really was, it doesn't take that much to be creative. We did puppetry with just paper puppets and things. We did the chenille stems, and then we had them put those together and make skits and do things with them, just to inspire that creative thinking and to realize you can be free to be creative and very open to it and not have to put
someone down. And this is an American company that flew you out there?
No,
for that?
It's Chinese.
There's hope. There's money everywhere. I suppose if you want to work, there's money even. And it's amazing.
It was in Beijing.
Yeah, because, you know, I just read where Japanese students are required to be the janitors in their schools, that they don't employ janitors in the schools. The children, starting from the eldest to the smallest, they're the ones who are responsible to keep their schools clean. So I can see how different cultures are different. And the Chinese do want you to memorize things. I know that for a fact, because we've got some in Trinidad and Tobago as well.
Yes.
They're very hardworking. I don't think they sleep. I really
don't.
Well,
they don't give them a lot of time, and therefore there's not always that fun interaction with the parents. The parents have to be drill sergeants for them, too. So the parents are saying, what do we do? How can we do things? How can we relate to them? And I'm talking to them about personalities and understanding their child's personality to help them on different ways to help them do what they need to do for school, as well as how can we still use the time we have got to do that bonding. The interesting thing is, in China, in many people I talk to, it was the grandparent that spends more time with the child than the parent who has to be out working.
Almost like the Montessori model, because my grandchild went to the Montessori schools, and they encourage creative thinking a lot.
Mm-hmm. Divergent thinking.
Yeah. And in Malaysia, how was the experience there?
I was at a creative ministry conference where I was teaching on puppetry there also, and teaching them to make puppetry. And it was very interesting and a lot of fun with the people. And they were people who were going to go out and evangelize and use puppetry and other things to reach children and to share love with them, and to share God's love, as well as to try to unite their communities. So that was very interesting there, too. Every place I was, it was a different basis that we were talking about.
So when your friends pressured you to become a writer, did you expect all of this?
No, I did not. I thought, in fact,
it's a gift that keeps giving.
It is.
Well, and it's God keeping to show you the way, right? Continually show you the way, and you're just opening the doors or just being...
That's right.
Well, we just want to tell our listeners on WWBC AM 1510 a little bit about Karen Whiting. Karen is an international speaker, a former television host, an award-winning author of 25 books for women, children, the military, and families. She's also a mom of five, including two rocket scientists, which for some reason I enjoy saying. And she's a grandmother. She writes to help families thrive, and she uses a lot of her personal experience as well. And you've written more than 700 articles for more than 60 publications. You write for Leading Hearts, The Kids Arc, a radio network. Awards include the Christian Retailing 2014 Best Award. That's amazing. And you're still selling books all over. So you write books for all ages. What is the central theme you focus on in your writing?
The central theme is family, is connecting in relationship, because that's the central basis, as you say. What we need is to love one another. And where does it start but the family? If we can teach our child and show love to our child, let them know they are accepted, that we approve of them, that, you know, we celebrate who they are, and then they are filled up, and that love spills out as they go and meet other people. They don't have to compete, because they start learning it's not competition, it's loving one another and being happy for what another person has done.
It's all about guidance, isn't it?
Yes, we're coaching them, really.
Yeah, I remember when we were children, we had 18 brothers and sisters, right? So there were no time for friends. And I remember saying, oh gosh, why don't we have any friends? Why do we always have to see these people day and night, everywhere you went, in the temples, you know, at home, at school? You always saw a sibling, no matter where you went.
With me, it was cousins. I grew up with 13 cousins within three houses. I'm one of 31st cousins, and there were some that were 5 miles away. That was far.
But you know what?
That was really far.
I have to say, looking back, it was a blessing to have so many siblings and people around you that were always there to watch what you were doing and guide you, because we saw that some people who forsake their families and their sisters and brothers and cousins and went with their friends, the friends taught them something different. Not always a friend will lead you to something great. Sometimes they take you to places that are evil and bad habits and influence your behavior and your environment. So I think you're right about focusing just on the family.
If we focus on the family, that will spill out. That will come out. And family, they bring it in. When my children were teenagers, you know, I had 22 straight years of teenagers, but when the boys particularly were on swim team and running, they were bringing home friends all the time that would sometimes show up before they did. And they would eat with us because their alternative was a frozen meal at home by themselves, which wasn't fun. And to make them feel part of the family, I would start throwing in the ingredients for pretzels into my bread maker so that when they came in, it was time to pull the dough out and I'd give it to them and give them a part to do on making pretzels for all of us to have with dinner. It stretched out the meal a little bit for the entree.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I know. But it also made them feel they were part of the family before they sat down to eat with us.
You include them. Yeah, it brings back a lot of memories. So when we lived in Tortoise Island, people just assume because you live in a great community and it's gated that you're all great people, right? But money doesn't really buy love and happiness. And I saw so many times when we would have a birthday party for our children, people would drop their kids off in the driveway without meeting us, without even coming to the door to say, hello, who are you? Who lives in this home? I mean, I don't understand how people encourage your children to have a sleepover at a friend's house, or a friend encourages them, but you don't know who live in that home. There could be an uncle that's living in that home that you don't want your child to be around. There could be a father, a mother, an older sibling. So I'm not sure where we lost that art of messaging with each other, what is good for children. But in your case, you had children who you were teaching them.
Yes.
And to be part of a family.
And to be honest with these teens, I often then would try to invite their family to come some other time so we would meet them.
So you made a good impression. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Davis? I mean, why do you find that parents would trust complete strangers with their children?
Yeah, well, anything that gives you time to focus on yourself, you know, that's how we've done it before. There was a time when you didn't, because you raised your children, you know, all the time, or somebody in the family did. But, you know, because of we're chasing in a dream that doesn't exist, we've lost the essence of a family. And that's what, you know, Christianity or God or anything, it's all about family. And I applaud what you're doing in terms of doing it, because, see, it just shows me that God has a sense of humor, where I'm out here trying to do one thing. It's like, what about? He said, well, I've got Karen over there doing stuff with
right.
the family.
Yeah,
I've
you
got
just
Sita
stick
doing
to your
this.
Part.
I've got everybody doing this.
She
like,
is
wait a minute. Everybody's doing what they want to do.
That keeps on giving, from that's walking right. with a friend, getting published, writing 25 books, speaking in Malaysia, and you use it through your faith as well. How does your faith sustain and feed you to your writing?
Well, it makes it easy for me to just trust God for what will come next and what I should be doing. That, you know, I will pray and ask Him what He wants me to write about, and it just works out. And sometimes it's not for that season. My bread book I wanted to do for 22 years before I found the publisher who was willing to contract it, did many books in between, but it also became a better book by the time it came out. Mm-hmm. And I think it came out for a time that we needed it for. So trusting Him is also trusting Him for the right time for each piece I'm going to write.
You've written for 60 publications. What do you like about article writing?
I like it's right there and then. It comes out quicker and people get that. I really do. I like that I can focus in on one little gem of knowledge or fact to give to somebody and give them something they can act on immediately. You know, and it's touches them. I can then read the letters to the editor afterwards when that has come out and see how did they respond. And that will sometimes engage in a conversation from there, because I might write another piece or write back through the editor.
Right. And do you have a website that if someone wanted to check out your books, they can check it out?
Yes, KarenWhiting.com. Karen with a K.
Very easy.
Yes, so and we put that on our Facebook page as well underneath our post for today's show.
That's right. You know, I wrote a few years ago, I used to write a column for the Florida Today, and we had like a Republican and a Democrat, and they would give us like a question, what do you think of the National Education Association? And I wrote, and I got a lot of feedback, and that's how I springboard into this show, because I had a huge following. But I always enjoyed researching the articles before I write. And then I had somebody who edited it, and then Florida Today printed it, and it was really successful. But what do you do for a background besides your experience? Do you research topics as well?
Yes, many times I have to research topics. The history book that Ellen mentioned that I wrote, I went to so many historic sites and libraries, historic libraries, and online things to research, interviewed people for the modern wars and all of that. But anything I'm going to write, I want to research. Before I even mention something on bread, I'm going to look more up. As much as I may have written Irish bread, I want to read the history of the Irish bread and anything like that, because I want to know more and make sure my background is there to give the right information to the readers.
She's so calm. I can't believe her and Dr. Davis both. They make the studio feel so great today. So, well, you know, Ellen, I think we've had a really great show today.
Fantastic.
We've got a minute left, so you do your thing.
Well, and the message from today is really look at your families and see how you can get that love going, and how do you get that dinner table, to, as Sita calls it all the time, kitchen table topics. How do you get that going?
Well, the family that prays together stays together.
Amen.
Hello.
The family
Amen.
That breaks bread together
yes.
stays together.
Amen.
And the family that understand, like my mom used to say, look at your fingers. All five fingers are not even. Everybody's different. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you come from, everybody's looking for love and appreciation.
That's right.
So if the message from our show today is a positive one of appreciate each other, appreciate your friends and your family, and like Ellen said, you know, somebody might be hurting, just smile. And Dr. Davis, you were right. Live every day as if it's the last day on earth, right?
That's right.
And we'll hook you up with Karen. Maybe you can find out where she went to speak.
Another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Folks, if you're tuning in, you can find us online at iTunes. And we will make sure that all of that information is posted on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. Have a great week.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess You are Lord in this place. We bow down and confess You are